Welcome to a Wholeness Podcast, a healthy home for hair professionals and our clients, where health and happiness is the top priority for those within the hair industry. Serving those who serve and giving the hair industry one great big hug. Hello, I'm your host, Fliss Downs, a barber, yogi, and meditation teacher. Come on in. Before I crack on with today's episode, if you haven't done so already, please hit the follow button on Spotify or on iTunes and leave me a star rating and review. By doing this, you will be helping me reach a wider audience and get the message out there sooner rather than later. I'd also like to mention that this podcast is proudly sponsored by Earth and Soul Pizza. If you are local to or travelling through Bairnsdale, use my promo code LOVEFLISS. That's LOVEFLISS. And get yourself a free large pizza when you buy one. With locally sourced produce and food exceptionally made by the team at Earth and Soul Pizza, be sure to get your wholesome, blissful pizza.
What I find absolutely phenomenal is how I can go on a video call with somebody I've never even met in person, somebody who I've communicated with and had a connection with online over Instagram purely through the awareness and the acknowledgement of myself and that other person having very, very similar, or let's say the same, values, ethics, beliefs, visions, and knowing there is a form of alignment between myself and the other person. That's exactly how I feel about Joe. Joe and I have been connecting online for a short while now, and there's so many parallels between us. We both gained our meditation certifications about the same sort of time at the end of last year. We both care deeply about the health and well-being of hair professionals, and we have a love to educate and lead within our field of expertise. When I say expertise, I can say that both of us have many passions, many interests, and it shines through in the way that her and I talk in today's episode. It was so wonderful to connect with Jo, and this conversation really goes to show how two humans that I've never met before can have a beautiful, genuine, open, honest conversation, and that there be a safe space between those two people. It's something that I really hold myself to, and I have a lot of pride in the work that I do here on A Wholeness Podcast. Jo has been in the hair industry since her teens, exactly like myself. She's gone through her fair share of ups and downs in her life to bring the wealth of knowledge that she holds today. She's the dynamic figure in the world of personal and professional development who offers a range of transformative programs. She looks at business strategies and provides uplifting sessions in the salon and hosts inspiring retreats in the landscapes of Bali and Ibiza. Jo has been able to find many mythologies to help other hair professionals feel empowered and to grow within their own space. So for me to bring you this episode with Jo, it brings me a great deal of excitement, and I really, really hope you enjoy this conversation just like I did when I spoke to her the weekend just gone. So what are we waiting for? Let's get stuck into it.
It's so good to finally meet you and see you.
I know. Oh, so nice. I can't believe we're so far away.
I know. And do you know what I was just thinking today, Jo? I was obviously doing a bit of stalking on you, maybe a bit too much today. And last night, and I thought to myself, I wish I'd found somebody like you and the space that you've created years ago in my career. Because I feel I would have had such a different experience in the industry had I been in the environment like yourself. And that's the biggest thing that's come to me since really looking at what you're doing and what you've created. So I wanted to share that initially with you. I was like, man, I just wish I found somebody like Joe years ago.
That means a lot. I do think it's really important, and that's why I do it as well, because that's how I feel. Like, yeah, everyone's quite lonely, I think.
Yeah, not just in the hair industry, but in so many ways, isn't it, right? And
yeah,
when you're in that space of feeling isolated, lonely, not included, there's no sense of community. And I feel the community side is something that I really feel shines through on your social media platform.
Important for me. And it's important that people feel welcome and part of something and we go out of our way. Hence why I'm late, actually, because coming in and I can't just walk in the salon and be like, okay, I'm doing this. I have to go and check in on everyone and see that they're okay. Yeah, it's, yeah, I agree. It's important.
I'm so curious to know your journey in the industry, because I can't quite tell your length of time in the industry, and also when you created The Loft as well, which I'm assuming that The Loft is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm 46 next week, and I got my first salon when I think I signed it for it when I was 20 and I got it when I was 21. My family have always been entrepreneurs. I moved to Scotland on my own and won a Prince's Trust Award to set up a salon. For me, it's very much about, just to kind of go off on a tangent slightly, it's about your beliefs around what's possible. So I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, setting up a salon at 20. Whereas for me, the thought of being employed at 20 was really scary, and I didn't want to be in a salon, and I was just really shy and a bit scared. So it made much more sense and was more of an obvious choice for me to set up my own business, and less scary than it was for me to go into a salon. So I know it sounds like I was young, but I wasn't. But I was also that kid that was selling biscuits for a pound when I was like 8 years old. I was an entrepreneur always. How can we make money out of this? I used to draw pictures and put them in my parents' gallery and stuff. I was always trying to find ways of setting up businesses. But before that, I worked for a company called Hair Associates when I was about 16. So I went to college. Then I worked for Hair Associates. Really didn't like the environment. Just wasn't for me. But I was in Knightsbridge and there was lots of models and it was really cool. Then I went away for a bit to just work. I worked in a salon in Jersey, then came back and won this Prince's Trust Award. So I was on a salon on my own. And then when I was 21, I started doing bridal hair in Gretna Green, loads of weddings. And I was doing 10 a day because they all get married in the same hotel. So you basically go from one room to the next. I used to charge like £20 for bridal hair and just do loads of them. This is like 2002, maybe. No, 2000 it was, because I remember the first time I used GHDs. They'd just come out.
Yeah.
And then I moved down here. So I had my daughter when I was 23, let go of that business and moved down here. I'm in Surrey now, near London, and convinced you can't have a bridal business because not Granny Green, not realizing, one, the power of the internet, and two, people get married everywhere. So I built a niche business, basically. Back in the day when people were doing hearts and flowers in hair and everyone had the same bridal hair, I think you're probably too young, but there was a bad time for bridal hair. And I did hair that was a bit cooler. I was still doing ponytails and just like cool undone updos, and then just really built my business and created a bit of brand awareness there. Instagram wasn't really a thing. So I just used to reach out to magazines. People ask me this all the time. The answer is I don't know how I got to this point, because I've never worked for a salon. It was always me on my own. I genuinely think it's just meeting people and making connections and asking people if they want to go for a coffee and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, we've got Instagram somewhere in the middle, but that's how I started. And I just used to work in my shed. Then I had a salon for about 9 years in Reigate, but I was just teaching how to do hair up. And in that time, I used to do loads of photo shoots for magazines, loads of photo shoots for bridal blogs and stuff like that. And I think just from being in that industry, I've learned so much, but that industry for me is like really saturated now. So I moved away from it, because as much as I love wedding hair, I don't love the wedding industry for me personally. It's just quite small and there's just such a big world out there. And
yeah.
I went back into doing hair. So the salon, as I said, was purely for training. And then in lockdown, I turned it into a salon to rent space, and I was going to do hair once a week. And then I've worked with GHD as an educator. I worked with Living Proof as an educator and Bumble and Bumble, and I do Bumble and Bumble's QVC. And all of those things genuinely have just come from me working on my own, reaching out to people and making friends.
From what you're saying, Jo, it sounds very much as if it all came down to your networking. It was the people that you was meeting. Yeah. But first and foremost, it came down to you taking action, taking responsibility for the direction that you wanted to go in.
Yeah,
had
sure.
You not reached out to those magazines, they wouldn't have known who Jo Irvin was, you know?
Yeah. And that's actually a very small part. So the most of what I do now, obviously, is coaching. 2017, I started doing day retreats in Ibiza for stylists.
I'm so keen to know more about, because from being a bridal specialist or hair up specialist, having your own salon, to then going to the retreat side of things, and I see the amount of personal development and growth work that you've done as well over the years, to jump from that to then bringing in retreats as well, it's diversity.
Yeah, I just think it's so, well, one, it's really important to pivot in your business for what's needed. I've been mentoring stylists since maybe 2016, but then I went on to get qualified, basically. I did branding courses, I did marketing courses, spent 2 years learning how to be a life coach, spent 2 years or a year and a half learning how to be a business coach. So in 2018, I set up what we would call the Love Hair Business Club. And it was like an online portal, and it has all of these different elements for you to learn. So for me, I was teaching bridal hair, but then very much noticing the thing that they needed was the buzz that they left when they'd been on a course and they'd met other stylists. That was like the magic bit. That, like, they loved the course, they learned lots of stuff, but it was who they met and how they connected that I was like, that we need to bottle this because it's amazing. And that's kind of onto doing the retreat. So the first one was just basically a hair course in Ibiza, and everyone was like, oh my god, I love this. And those that kind of stayed in the same hotel, I had a great time, and it built this really beautiful, you know, when you get a bunch of hairdressers together, it's just magic. But it was only for the days. And then the following year, I did my first one in Ibiza as a week-long retreat, and it was just magic. It was so good, because for me, you can be an amazing hairstylist, but if you're not confident, you're not going to ever push yourself out of that zone. And we're constantly comparing and feeling judgment from others. But when you get all those people in a room, everyone's suddenly like, oh, actually, I can help you. And I don't mind that you're better than me. And everyone learns from each other. And when the water rises, all ships rise with it. And they all go off, and then they were leaving and doing incredible things. And that is how I've come to do retreats and learn more, because it was just such a buzz. And you can genuinely see the impact that being on that retreat has on their business afterwards.
Yeah. And taking us back when you as a child selling these bits, bobs, you've mentioned about your parents are quite entrepreneurial. Do you feel that that leaked into the childlike state of yourself? In terms of all the way that your parents acted and behaved and the habits that they took on, that you sort of, I guess, to a degree, when we're children, we kind of copycat what our parents do and what adults do and what other children do. So do you think that's what sparked that initial flame in you, was seeing the way that your parents were?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, when you're younger, you don't really think about that. But now that I've done the work and that I understand how your brain grows and all those kind of things, of course, when you see your parents working for themselves and you see success. So my granddad was a taxi driver. My nan was a cleaner. But both of them, their work ethic, the way that they treated people, the way that they spoke to people, the way that people connected with them, that for me is the life lesson, because they're just such lovely people. People connect with them and then they go on to get bigger. And my granddad was a black cabbie and ended up driving celebrities around London and doing all the Wimbledon taxi back and forth to the games, because we're always like, what else can we do? How can we pivot? What's the opportunity? What's the next thing? Yeah, obviously, if your parents and your grandparents have always worked for someone else, and you go to college, you get a job, you stay in that job till you retire, that for you is going to be your safe space and what you do. Weirdly, for me, having a business is my safe space. I would feel more uncomfortable if I was employed by someone. I would be the worst employee ever, by the way. I'd be sacked within about a week. Even yesterday, my client was like, oh, I can't do that because I can't get the time off work. I was like, what do you mean you can't get the time off work? I've never not been able to get the time off. I don't understand. That must be awful.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
Being employed is terrifying, personally. It's just because that's all I know, isn't it? To be self-employed.
When did the love of hair begin for you? Do you remember that moment when sort of hairdressing was a potential path for you?
Yeah, 100%. When I was a kid, we used to get a hairdresser from Vidal Sassoon, used to come to our house, and she used to wear dungarees and she had coloured hair. So this is the 80s, so you can imagine. She was so cool. Yeah, just really wanted to be a hairdresser. Then when I was about 8, I used to cut my granddad's hair in the garden, the worst thing you've ever seen. And he used to pay me £1 and give me some marshmallows. So I remember that. I remember my nan coming back from shopping and being like, oh my God. And I'd literally like gone over my granddad's hair with the clippers. And I said to my dad, actually, when I was about 12, that I wanted to be a hairdresser. And he was not up for it at all, because there's so much unconscious bias about being a hairdresser. It's insane. And he was like, okay, so if you're going to be a hairdresser, you know, do it on a cruise ship. Because obviously in the 80s, that's like the height of success, is working on a cruise ship. Or own your own salon. Basically, don't just work in a shop. And there is nothing wrong with just working in a shop. But yeah, for me, I think when you're constantly told and from a young age, that's what forms your thoughts and your ideas and what you believe to be possible. And it's just was never an option to do anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I find that very fascinating, you sharing that, because my mum was a stay at home. My dad was the person that provided for the family, and they've never been in the entrepreneurial space whatsoever. They don't comprehend it. They stay in the safe zone and security. And I totally get that. That impacted the way that I then went into my work life. But yet, all that time, Joe, I have really struggled being in employment positions. And initially, when my career started, I didn't quite know why. Why am I struggling to work for other people? Why am I not finding the right salon? Or why am I not enjoying this? And why do I hate having to ask that time off and being limited? And it's only until I've gone through my career and also had times out of the career and come overseas and lived overseas that I now realise, and I'm looking back at my mental well-being, I realise that actually maybe potentially, this is only sort of a little moment that's come to me over the last few months, and I've sort of said to myself, maybe my depression, my anxiety came from the fact that I wasn't actually living to my internal values, but I didn't know that. And so, yeah, how you've gone through your career is very different to myself, but yet behind the scenes, both of us have always had that drive to be independent, to be entrepreneurial, to succeed, to connect and find that environment that actually suits exactly who we are. And it feels to me like you've managed to really go down that path in a beautiful way. And I've gone off on this really weird tangent of a journey, which both of our journeys is exactly as they're meant to be, leading to be looking at the differences between our journeys.
This is what kind of got me doing the coaching side as well, because what you've said completely resonates as well. Because it's like, whatever your belief is, I've always been told my brother was a genius, he's very academic, and I was the creative one. I only got 4 GCSEs, one of them was art. The rest were just a bit pointless. And it's always, oh, Joe, go and do this. And you're creative. And I remember my brother, when he was 16, he did the coast to coast, which is a walk from one side of the country to the other. And I remember saying to my parents, oh, I'd love to do that. And they were like, oh, it's not for you. No, don't be silly, Joe. And it's very much like you're the younger sister. And it wasn't until I did my own coaching journey when I was learning that I realized how much I had held on to the labels of you're the creative one, you're not academic. They've never said, obviously, you're not clever enough, but it's always like, I'm like, hold on a second, it's me that's done this. I think as well, when you've had a child at 23 and you're a hairdresser, you're ticking boxes that you don't want to be ticking.
That's a stereotype, isn't it? Unfortunately, we do have that rep.
Those labels or not, do you want to take in that your parents have this job or not? Because for them, they didn't want their child to have a risky life or not have enough money or be stressed. So they're like, oh gosh, just get a job and stay there. That's going to be so much better for you, because that's what they learn. Yeah. I'm with my kids, I'm like, get your own business. It's going to be so much better. And they're probably like, I just want to be employed.
Wow. Yeah. It's, God, I feel I can resonate so much with you there, and just the things that you're bringing up, such as you're not academic enough and you're the creative one. And when you said about, of course, being a young person with a child, you're hitting the stereotype, and you must have heard this somewhere along your career as well, is hairdressers are dumb.
Yeah.
That's hairdressers. And it's far from the truth. It is so far from the truth. And luckily, time's gone on, that stereotype or that sort of stigma has reduced. But I still think in some way, it's still like lingering in the air.
Oh my God, 100%. So I live in Surrey, which is quite affluent, there's lots of bankers. When we go out for dinner, I'll be surrounded by like insurance brokers, whoever. I still sometimes I'm like, when I say I'm a hairdresser, but I rarely say I'm a life coach. I run retreats. I do this, I do that, because I'm proud to be a hairdresser. So I will still say, but it's usually guys are a bit older. This is a massive generalization, but generally it is. Or women come in the salon, they think you're just a hairdresser. Or if you get a nice car, they'll be like, oh, I'm clearly paying you too much. Really? Like, that is still very much there. But I think for our industry, imagine, you've got all these labels. You've got your friends saying, well, you're clearly not good enough to go to university, or you're not clever enough, or you only got 4 GCSEs, or you got pregnant at 22, whatever. Plus your parents have this unconscious bias. And then you're like, I'm going to be creative. I'm going to try and connect with my client. I'm going to try and build a business. I'm going to work standing on my feet all day. I'm going to like come up with these crazy colors and numbers and all these other things. Like, you're already dealing with so much. And that's why we burn out so quickly, because the unconscious bias and the labels and the shit that we are holding is wearing us down before we've even started our day. And that's why we need to look after our hairdressers.
Absolutely. I'm so with you there on that one. Burnout is real. I mean, it's real for many people, but particularly within the hair industry, the amount of stress that our bodies put under. And then, of course, like you say, everybody's stuff that we take on. And I guess it's educating the industry as a whole how to prevent yourself getting to a state of burnout.
Yeah, I think we teach colour and we teach cutting and styling skills, but we know for a fact that your client comes back to you, I think it's like 50 to 70% of the time, because of the connection with the stylist. That's why they freak out when you go on holiday or when you've moved to another salon or whatever, and they want you, and that's why you feel that need. It's not the hair, it's the connection. You don't want to let your client down. So why don't we teach the confidence when we know that that's the main reason that they're coming back to you? Why don't we teach those skills? And also, hairdressers listen to stuff. And I know it's like a bit of a joke, or, you know, we're unpaid therapists and that kind of stuff, but we literally listen to people's cancer stories. We listen to their birth stories. We hear about family dynamics. Yeah, we talk about what's on Netflix and what's happening, but we also have to deal with this really heavy stuff. And we take that home unless we are taught or learn to let go of that. And most hairdressers don't actually get those skills until they've burnt out. Like, how many people do you know that have burnt out badly and then come back and gone, okay, now I'm going to live like this? We don't do it until the shit hits the fan, and then we're like, I'm going to make a life change. I did it. I was literally in hospital. It was horrendous.
Yeah.
You're already a hairdresser and not good enough, and now you can't cope. And that's like, oh, you know, you're really low then. It's like you can't do anything. And it's just that you're dealing with so much.
Would you feel comfortable sharing how you ended up in hospital and what led you to that? Because one of the things that I see in you is how you've took on the well-being aspect and implemented it in your own life, I feel something major would have happened for you to then go off into this well-being side and finding meditation. Because I also realized that you and I completed our meditation training about the same sort of time last year. So you just saying that you ended up in hospital, was that the turning point for you? Yeah, I'm curious if you're happy to share that.
Of course. So when I was doing weddings, I was doing like 4 a week. And it was early and my children were small. Teddy was 3 or 4. And my daughter's 4 years older, so she would have been about 8. And I was just constantly working. And that was very much to prove myself. Like at the time, I wouldn't have said that, but I know that now, as you know, when you do the work and you see what makes you you and you understand yourself a bit more, I look back and go, oh God, I totally see that. And I see that in other people, which is why I do what I do now. So my big thing, I had so much shame that I was carrying from being a hairdresser. Not from being a hairdresser, but from not being enough. And always feeling like other people thought something of me and I had to prove myself and I wasn't good enough at this and I wasn't good enough at that. And so I was always trying to prove and be better and to my own detriment. And then one day I was always getting urine infections and kidney infections. I was always ill, like always ill. And then one day I went to a yoga class. So I was in this space of I really need to sort my stuff out. I went to a yoga class and it was outside and it was so peaceful and lovely. And my phone was next to me and I was lying there and I could hear it ding, ding. And I was thinking, what? Why is that dinging? And you're supposed to be in Shavasana. And I was like, oh shit, it's because I've got that tonight and that tomorrow. And then I realized that basically over the next 40 days, I was in Devon, then I was in Paris, then I was here, then Teddy had this and Georgia had that. It was like the overwhelm was unreal, but that was like the first time I just stopped and I had a panic attack basically in yoga class out of nowhere. And the next week, the exact same thing happened. And it was starting to be that when I stopped, I was having panic attack. But the second time I was having pains in my chest, I was doubled over. And so it ended up in the doctors who sent me to the hospital. And they were basically like, you're dehydrated. You have an anxiety attack. You've got this. You've got all this stuff going on. You need to rest. And I was crying. And they were like, you know, why are you so upset? And I was like, I need to go to work. But oh my God, what do you do? This is awful. You poor thing, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a hairdresser. They were probably thinking she's a solicitor or she's something amazing. Literally had to take everything off and check myself out to go and do a wedding. And I was like, I need a fucking reality check. Like, what the hell? This isn't the worst bit. Okay, so then I'd done the retreats, I'd done all the stuff, everything was good. I was helping people. I was like, this needs to change, we need to support ourselves. I was created the Love Hair Business Club, it was all good. And then the same thing happened, but this time I basically hadn't told anyone. And my friend had a little intervention. So Craig had gone away with kids. I couldn't go because I don't know if you ever had a panic attack.
Have, yes.
Like an anxiety. So you basically want to get out of your body, don't you? And they were driving to Scotland and the idea of sitting in the car to me felt, I just couldn't do it. I was in such an anxious space. It felt like I was asking for a panic attack and I was scared that I was going to have one. So I just couldn't go in the car. It was my kids and my daughter's boyfriend and whatever. I just couldn't do it. So I stayed at home and I was thinking, I'll be at home on my own. I'll be nice and chilled. I can chill out because I was supposed to be away. So I've got the week off. And my friends were basically like, Joe, you don't share anything. We're worried about you. You seem stressed, you're holding stuff in. And I was like, fine. I'm very, at that time in my life, I was very much like, keep everyone at arm's length. Don't show anyone that you're struggling. Blah, blah, blah. Again, I was in a bar class. My heart was obviously beating because I was exercising. And then I felt a bit funny and had to go outside. I was supposed to meet a friend after my bar class. And I messaged her and said, I'm not coming. And she clearly knew something wasn't right. But where are you? And I was like, I'm just going to walk to Costa and then I'm going to go home. Like, I'm really busy, so I'm not going to meet you. And she just walked down anyway and saw me. And as soon as I saw her, I like put my T-shirt over my face because I knew I was going to have a panic attack. And I was trying to hold it in. And then it ended up being the loudest, most dramatic panic attack ever in the middle of Costa Coffee. Literally, again, she had to take me to the hospital. I was a wreck and I couldn't speak. I couldn't make a cup of tea. I couldn't drive. I couldn't function for about 2 weeks after, like literally, it was like a nervous breakdown, basically. My nervous system just went, no, not doing this anymore, because for all these years I've been fighting it. And for kind of doing what I've done since then, I've realised, for example, say every item of clothing you've worn since you were born has gone into a wardrobe and you've not cleared the wardrobe. And then one day you just can't shut the wardrobe door and then it just opens. Or there's a bucket and it's just dripping tiny, tiny, tiny. And then one day it just overflows. Because even though you're not talking about stuff and you're not processing and you're not letting anyone know that you've got stuff going on and you've got fear and shame and all these other things, your brain and your body does. So, you know, that whole thing, if you don't take a day off, your body's going to do it for you and you won't have a choice. It's that. So my body just went no and shut off. So I had a real process. I was like a child. My poor husband, he got me booked in for CBT, speaking therapy, all of these things. And the one thing that worked was EFT, which is emotional freedom technique. And I do that in my coaching. It's incredible. And that was really my turning point. And, you know, like I didn't open post forever. Like simple things. I hadn't opened post. I hadn't phoned people. I hadn't replied to messages. And it just built up and built up and built up. And then one day my body could not deal anymore. And it just stopped. And that now is why I do what I do, because it was hideous. And I think so many people that, you know, that kind of boss move, that hustle mentality is just push through it. You cannot push through it because one day it will just stop. It's not a choice. It's not a weekend off and you're going to be okay. It's a lifestyle. And as I said, we have so many things before we even start. It's so much for our brains to deal with. And that fight or flight, when your cortisol is just running constantly, you're just making yourself so ill. There's no one's going to win in that situation. It's just so important to tap into that. And it's so possible to live like an incredibly happy, successful, joyous life without getting to that point. But for some reason, we're still proving to people that I am talking about me, but I'm also, I know so many people do this. You know, we've got to get 10 grand a month. We've got to get 10,000 followers. We've got to do that. When you're ill, you will swap everything to get to that point. You will swap everything to be okay. You won't care about how many followers you've got and what everyone else is doing. You literally won't. You'll just be like, I just want to be able to make a cup of tea without having a panic attack. Like, it's just not worth it.
Thank you for sharing that. That sounds very taxing on your body. Taxing on your life, taxing on your business. From that point, what was your, I want to kind of say like your butterfly moment. Do you remember this moment where you was like, okay, I can't go through that again. What can I do? What tools can I use? Who can I connect with to help me move into a space where I don't have anxiety attacks, move into a space where I can sustain this? It comes down to sustainability. What thing, what journey did you go on to find the sustainability in now what you do? Because you do so many things, but it seems like they all complement one another.
When I had this time and the only thing that helped me was EFT, so then I used to do EFT at home. But when you do that, it shifts your mental state completely. So obviously, if you're on the floor and you're literally like, I can't even lift my head up today. But there will be times if you could move up to one of, I'm sitting up in bed. Or you could move up one to, you know, you're kind of gradually getting to a point. And you can create almost like a feeling of euphoria, like you feel fucking amazing. You feel like you can do anything. Because it works on your meridian lines and your belief system. So it sounds so woo-woo, and to me, 6 years ago, I'd have been like, well, a load of rubbish. Now, it just works. And then you're just making changes. So even things as simple as journaling, I made very conscious decisions. I consciously changed my life. If I had a day off, we would go to the beach. If we were at the beach, I would sit and be really aware. So sometimes when I'm meditating or doing the EFT before I start, I have to take myself to a happy place. And that for me, as for many people, is often by the beach, by the water. What do you see? What are your senses telling you? What do you smell? What can you hear? What does the earth feel like underneath you? So I would go to the beach, even if I was just with my family, had a picnic or whatever, and I would take a mental Photoshop of that so that I could use it. And then I just started living in this happy place where I would just be very conscious. So I would walk through the park to work and chat to dogs on the way to work rather than get in the car and drive it. We all have this life, but you get a choice, literally the path that you take. What I'm eating in the morning, does that make me feel good? Or does that make me feel anxious? Do I need that coffee? Do I need some water? And just being really grateful. So gratitude, journaling. And then even my dad's got cancer. He passed away 2 years ago, but he actually died from COVID. It was just an incredibly stressful time. But I lent on the tools that I have. I cannot change what's happening. I cannot save my dad. I cannot change what's happening to him. But I can turn up as the best person that I can be in this situation. I can't make the situation better, but I can be the best version of me in this situation. What does that look like? And then when he passed, that's actually when I started meditating every day, like an absolute gangster. I was like, I couldn't breathe. I just had to be outside. And being outside is a big thing for me. Being grounded, dancing, like literally the night before my dad's funeral, we went out for a couple of drinks and I was just dancing on my own for about an hour. Because that's what makes me feel good. And you just have to make choices. So there was a butterfly moment in that EFT really helped me. But I think it was just that I don't want to feel like that anymore. How do I make decisions? And it's not like, oh, that's me, I'm just different now. And of course, there are days where I feel anxious, but I know what to do when I do. Having compassion for other people, being kind is a really big thing for me. Selfishly, being nice to other people makes me feel really good. So if I'm having a down day, I'm like, who can I be nice to? Like, who can I reach out to? And that's why when you said about your values earlier, I was like, 100%, because when you live in line with your values, you can't not be happy. Well, I did my meditation training in Bali. They've got nothing, literally. They're the happiest people that you'll meet. And I know I've heard the same about India. They've got nothing. And they are so happy. They're so grateful. They're so connected. You know, it's not about what we have. We get those choices every day. And you get to choose, not necessarily, you don't have to be happy, but you get to choose to make the most of that situation. And I think if I can do that when my dad's in the worst space and the worst possible thing happened, and you can still choose to be the best person that day, then you're owning your life.
Yeah, completely. And when you're choosing these options, you're choosing to own your life. And when you're not conscious and feeling so out of control, then you can't lead the way forward.
Yeah.
With yourself, because you've got no sense of direction or anything.
Yeah, 100%. So I coach for Schwarzkopf, for Bumble and Bumble, for leaders, salon owners and stylists, because you cannot be a leader. You cannot look after other people and guide them and show them the way and support them to be their best selves if you are not showing up as your best self. And that sounds a bit wanky, but it's true. You have to be able to not be reactive because you've had a bad day or because you've got stuff going on. You can't be reactive. You have to be vulnerable and open and honest and lead and guide in a way that's authentic to you.
Well, it's practice what you preach, isn't it?
Yeah.
And leading with integrity as well.
Yeah.
That can be challenging, particularly when you are going through your ebbs and flows. To still show up, to still lead when you are taking a bit of a hit. What you just said about the being vulnerable and communicating, still leading with integrity and following what you're doing, but even just by explaining a situation that you might be in, which is why you're vulnerable, that's then leading the way for your other staff members or people in your team or the people that you're going to be collaborating with, that then gives them the, let's say, the green light to then maybe open up and express something that's going on for them as well. And you can come together in this beautiful environment to say, wow, okay, so today actually we're holding a fair bit of heaviness. What can we all do collectively to raise our vibrations to enable us to move through this together and still accomplish what we're needed to accomplish?
Yeah. I think someone said to me once, shame grows in silence. And that is huge for me, because when you're holding on to something, whether that's a personal thing or I can't do this or I fucked up at work, or, you know, something's happened and you don't say it and you hold on to it, it just spirals. But as soon as you come forward and say, this has happened, it's like, oh, I can just let go of that now. And you don't even need other people to be like, oh, that's okay. It could just be, okay, cool. And then you move forward. But it does, it grows, and that's what eats you away. But creating that space for in your company or in your salon or wherever, where people can share, they also don't feel like when they can share it, everyone's like, blah, 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 this happened and that happened. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, this is what's happening right now, to give you a heads up and make some space for me today. And that is creating a good team and a good environment for people to grow and work and be creative. You can't be creative when you're stressed. Not really. You can't be free when you're fearing judgment. You can't show up as your best self when you're actually holding on to stuff that you feel that you can't share.
You've spoken a bit about worthiness as well. That's a huge thing for me in terms of feeling worthy enough to go out and achieve this or to go after this dream. Do you feel somewheres along your way that there was a really big period you said about how you felt you constantly had to prove yourself to people? Do you feel like that came from the sense of not feeling worthy enough?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is childhood stuff, where my brother was a genius, and literally if you said that to me now, I'd be like, no, I swear to God, all I ever heard was that my brother was a genius. My dad had a business in Harley Street. My mum had a gallery. Everyone's successful. So as much as I'm saying it feels natural to me to run a business, it doesn't feel natural to me to be successful. It feels natural to me to be in charge of my own stuff, but it doesn't feel natural to be all about me and be the one and be the breadwinner and all of those things, or to do any of that. And I think hair up has always been my thing. And I'm quite self-critical. I think all creative people are a little bit. But I know when I've done a good hair up, and I think people were noticing my work. I think one of my biggest things was my website got ripped off by someone, but somebody that I knew, that I thought she was really pretty, she was really cool, had a really successful business. I thought she was amazing. And she basically ripped off my website. I was gutted, devastated. And I looked at this website and I was literally reading words that I'd written. It's a kick in the teeth, isn't it? As much as the ego gets a real kick in the teeth. I felt sick. I was sad for about 2 days. Like, I was really gutted. And then I thought, if I was writing a website, I would be looking at people that were amazing. I'd be looking at results too. I'd be looking at people that are iconic and amazing and just really stand out in our industry. So the fact that this person was looking at my website, I was like, she wants to be like me. I'm really good at being me. And that changed everything for me, because suddenly I went through my whole website, because I think on websites, especially back then, this was probably 2010, like that. It was, we were all quite corporate. We all spoke how we felt that our clients wanted to hear from us. And I just changed everything to make it more my personality, so that it was, if you were reading it, you kind of knew that I'd written it. Authentic. And that really, when I started living authentically that way and coming across and speaking to my clients in that way, that changed everything. So my worth comes from me, especially when you get older. I think when I was 40, I was like, I literally don't give a shit about me anymore. Like, as long as I'm okay with me, I'm all right. As long as my kids, I mean, kids always think you're a bit of a dick, but as long as my kids aren't like properly ashamed of me, we're in a good space. And that's worth has changed my business. Literally from that moment, my confidence soared, my business changed forever, and I began to build a more personal brand and live more authentically because I wasn't holding back anymore. Because it's so easy, especially now with Instagram. This is pre-Instagram, actually, but with Instagram now, it's like, oh, she's doing this and she's doing that and they're living this amazing life. And we all know it's not true, but I won't ever show anything. If I don't show up on Instagram for a while, it's probably because I need some time and I'm not feeling great, because if things aren't great, I won't post it because I don't feel good. I will never post something that isn't authentic. And I'll say when I'm struggling, I just don't think it's healthy.
We need that realness, that rawness, that authenticness for a sense of humanity to come back together again.
No one is inspired by perfection. No one's interested. Like, literally, no one's like, oh, there was this really successful person that had loads of money and built a business and it was amazing. Like, the success and the inspirational story comes from this happened, then they came back and look at them now. That's when you get behind them and you're like, oh my God, this person's amazing. I really want to support them, rather than like, oh yeah, I did this. And by the way, my parents never supported me with any of my businesses. In case you're like, yeah, that's not what you just said. Literally, I was on my own.
Wow. And actually, the Prince's Trust, I only found out about the Prince's Trust a few years ago. And I thought, damn it, if I knew about that, or if I had the mentors and the coaches around me before I was 30, and when I first started my career in the industry, I thought, what direction could have I gone in? And you've just gone to highlight how the Prince's Trust can help people under 30, being your late teenage into your adolescent age. It's so wonderful to hear a story actually from a charitable cause that I've once gone, I could have been there and done that, but I'm over 30 now, so there's no hope for me.
Yeah, well, I think I was 20, when I did that. Honestly, it was like the X Factor, the panel, it was proper stressful. I think when you're younger, for me anyway, I was a bit fearless. Nothing had consequences. A bit like, I'm not really that bothered. Yeah. And now I'm like, I don't know how I did that at that age.
Yeah. It's funny to look at yourself, isn't it? And go like, wow, who was I back then?
And then I completely lost my confidence for about 15 years and then it came back again. So yeah, for anyone not feeling confident right now, it comes back, I promise.
Yeah, it does. It just takes time. It takes yourself as an individual to take action, but also to have that support network around you, and gradually it does come back. It does. I feel like I could talk to you all day.
I want you to talk to me all day.
I know, we need to do a part two.
Yeah.
The fascinating and amazing thing is, Jo, is that we can connect to people online, and that's how you and I have connected. And build that network online, and you can gravitate towards those that are aligned with your values. And just from listening to your journey and your direction, it just feels very aligned for me to be having a conversation with you. And some of the things that you shared with me have just really resonated, and I've felt that in my heart. So thank you so much for sharing part of your story and just a snippet of your life with us.
Welcome. Thank you for asking me. It's been so nice.
It's amazing. You've shared your story, and I love to be able to give people the opportunity, or for me to show people a glimpse of someone's story. Thank you for sharing all that you have today, my love. And I can't wait to connect with you more. And I look forward to connecting more with you as well, Jo.
Thanks, darling. Take care of you soon.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
What a delightful conversation that was with Jo. She's an absolute gem. And I thoroughly enjoyed having a conversation with her. Very excited to be connecting with Jo, even more so in the future. And who knows, we might create a part two to this episode. Otherwise, we're going to be casually having a catch up over a cuppa, talking more about our interests and our visions with a potential collab in the future. So if that ever arises, I will certainly be sharing that with you lovelies. If any of today's conversation you loved, then please do reach out to Jo. You'll find her on Instagram at joirving.coaching.
You'll find her salon at @theloft_Reigate and her very own hair account, Jo Loves Hair. If you'd be an absolute darling, please leave a review, rate this episode, and even share it with other fellow hair professionals or even somebody that you know would just enjoy the listen. On next week's episode, I welcome Phil. I met this guy not so long ago in person, and I absolutely adored his energy, his wisdom, his presence. Phil is the founder and director of Balance Energy Australia, and this is such a fascinating concept with what he does in the health and well-being industry. I won't be sharing any more until next week's episode, so be sure to be jumping on next week's episode. Enjoy the rest of your week, beautiful beings, and
as always, stay tuned and stay real. Join me every Wednesday for a Wholeness podcast. I'll catch you real soon. Peace, love, and light.